Welcome to the Dr. April Jasper Show, relevant conversations for business owners of today. Welcome, everyone, to the Dr. April Jasper Show. We're so excited to be here with our special guest friend, Jeff Stanton. And David's going to tell you a little bit more about him. But Jeff, thanks for being here.
Mr. Six Time.
Absolutely. It's great to be here in the Triumph dealership here in Tampa. And it's an honor.
We love it. So I grew up. The reason we are having this podcast is because I grew up on motorcycles, mini bikes. Started out with, remember the old Edger engines?
Yes.
Difficult clutch.
Yeah.
Cut your heels all up all the time and burns from the mufflers.
I have the first motorcycle that my dad taught me how to ride. It's an Articat.
Oh my gosh.
An original Articat.
All right.
That I had it restored. It's in my trophy room with the centrifugal clutch.
Oh, there it is.
It's all original in our trophy room in our basement.
That is awesome.
I know all about that.
You know all about that.
Yeah.
The slices on the ankles and the burns from the muffler. It's a great thing. So I grew up on dirt bikes, and April was with me as a young guy riding dirt bikes. And we go to Daytona every year, and we happen to run into you this year.
And you're a hero.
Yeah.
So, I mean, my goodness, to have you here is such a joy and honor, a privilege.
Yeah.
And our kids are like, what? You're going to see Jeff? Oh, my gosh, this is incredible. So
just another person. I don't put myself up on any pedestals. I was raised by a great family.
That's awesome.
on a farm in Michigan.
Yeah.
Put in a lot of hard work, and I was just fortunate to be able to put that in my racing career and be very successful at it.
And you started, what, 85? Went pro, 86?
86. So my parents are like, you don't know where you're going to go with your career.
Yeah.
I need you to graduate high school and get that diploma because you may or may not. And so I was thankful for that.
Yeah.
You know, there ain't a kid in today's racing world that has a high school diploma.
Right.
Not that it matters much, but... '86 was the first year professionally.
Okay.
But it started back in the early 70s.
Wow.
You know, as a kid.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I asked my buddy yesterday, I'm like, your YZ60. We had a YZ60 that I rode. I think it was an 81, right? And he goes, yes, I specifically remember the manual because we bought it used for like $200, $225.
If you had that bike right now, it's worth about $4,000.
Isn't that awesome? So. And he wishes, because it actually came back around like 15 years later, and he's like, I think I should get that. And I said, yeah, Dan, you need to get that. And he goes, but maybe not. But, yeah. So we started then. I started 81 is when I started riding.
Yeah.
How old were you?
I was 8.
All right. And you were riding at 4 or 5 years old?
Yeah, I was riding at 4 or 5 years old.
I sent you some
of the pictures of that.
Yes.
Of them Yamaha 1977 Yamaha YZ80,
so
YZ100,
yep.
Chasing the animals around. Was born and raised on a big farm. There wasn't a time on the farm where we didn't have 2,000 or 3,000 head of sheep.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
And so that's when lamb was a popular market for selling and eating.
Yeah.
And so my grandfather went to all the local markets and bought small, and we fed them out and resold them. And so, and then with that, we had a wool business. And so just been on the farm. I'm the 8th generation. My dad just passed a week ago. He was the 7th generation on the farm. And so a lot of history there.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you raced professionally. You had 6 championships. That's why we call you Six Time, right? You're Insta Six Time. You've had 6 AMA motocross, supercross championships. You won Daytona 4 times.
Yep. In a row.
4 times in a row, which is winning Daytona 1 time for a supercross guy is a big deal, right?
Yep. Daytona, I love Daytona. I talked about that hard work and that ethic. I was always a hard worker. And
that's
back,
awesome.
Daytona's a tough race.
It
you
is.
Know, it's usually super sandy, super rough, super technical.
Uh-huh.
And Midwest, I rode in the sand all the time. So there wasn't a sand race or a sand track that I just didn't dominate at.
Wow, that is awesome. So there weren't as many outdoors back then, right? Is that right? Or was it the same number?
No,
of
it was the same
races?
Number.
Really?
Yeah, it's the same now as it was back then. We did 12 to 14 supercrosses and another 12 outdoor nationals.
Okay.
And ironically enough, really all the same tracks now.
Millville, Redbud.
We raced all of them back in the day, too.
Yeah.
You know, I say back in the day.
They're still going.
So things I say things really haven't changed. The bikes and the technology's obviously changed through the roof, but all the hotels and all the airplanes and all the tracks, in the, you know, they've advanced along with all of that. You know, well, Redbud now compared to 1989, dude, totally different world.
Yeah.
You know, so, but
that is crazy.
Yeah.
All right, so you finished up motocross, supercross after what, 8 years, 8 year career?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then what? Then what? What did you do?
So I retired in my last year was 94, and Honda signed me on as a consultant.
Okay.
And so I trained Jeremy McGrath, Ricky Carmichael, endless amounts of riders. You know, that's Ernesto awesome. Fonseca lived with us for a whole summer.
Wow.
Davey Millsaps lived with us for a whole summer. The list goes on and on of how many riders that my wife and I opened the door for, and they spent many summers with us. So.
And those are the guys my kids grew up watching.
Yeah.
So, and that's when it was on TV, is more than back when you were riding. It was hard to see the races. I remember as a kid being like, I can't see the race.
What
not
channel
on TV.
Is it on?
Yeah,
right.
And
it's
on one time, and that's it. You either got it or you missed it.
No, 100%.
Now
so I did that probably 8-9 years as a consultant. Still traveled to all the races. For me, it was a way to wean myself away from the traveling and the training and the everyday abuse, and still have my feet in it and be a part of the sport.
Wow!
And so I was with Honda for almost 25 years.
That's
as
incredible.
Either a professional racer or as a consultant, and I enjoyed it because. The consulting end, I enjoyed it a bunch because I was still riding a lot, still training with those guys a lot, so I kept fit, kept active, and you know, and still dabbled in the sport. So.
And obviously, he knew what he was talking about because all of them are amazing riders as well.
Yeah.
So
oh,
good
man.
Job to you and Sarah.
Oh, yeah,
yeah, thanks. And
incredible.
So, and really the relationships. Ernesto Fonseca, he just texted me 2 days ago, and you know, we was talking, and so obviously Ricky and I are good buddies, and we were. Of all places, we were going through an Amish community the other day.
Yep.
A week ago. And Sarah looks over and she's like, Jeremy McGrath all over the side of that building. And it was a monster ad, and it had a picture of Jeremy, and it said Jeremy McGrath.
Look
so I pulled up a video, and I said, and I sent it to him in a text. I'm like, of all places, Jeremy, we're in an Amish community, and you're all over this billboard.
That's so cool.
You might not have even known.
Yeah, I texted it to him, and we chatted back and forth. So the relationships are endless, and that's what's so cool about the motocross community is it's a whole separate family.
It is.
That you just accumulate and you know, get close to.
Right.
So, you know, what I think is really interesting is what you're doing today. So talk to us about the new shirt you're wearing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here we are at a Triumph dealership now. And going back to consulting, I basically stopped that when my kids were in their years of sports. Mm. And I was missing middle school sports and, you know, soon to be high school sports. So it's like, okay, these kids, you're never going to get that time back.
Right.
So it's like, all right, I got to slow down. And so I took probably a 6 or 7 year hiatus from, you know, traveling a bunch. And I always wanted to start an adventure business. Northern Michigan is absolutely gorgeous. Michigan is a hidden treasure for motorcycling and or snowmobiling because we have more trail than any other state. Groomed, marked trail because we're a third of the state. The northern part of the state is all national forest.
Oh, wow.
And so it's just endless amount of riding. It's beautiful. Lake Michigan shoreline is beautiful. If you haven't been to the UP or the Mackinac Island, I mean, I can just go on and on. It's just Michigan's gorgeous. And so I wanted to be able to showcase how beautiful Michigan is and what there is to offer there. And what a better way to do it is on an adventure bike.
Oh, wow.
And so I've always wanted to start this, and I had a passion for riding and talking to people, and so Triumph just called me out of the blue one day and said, hey, I hear you want to start an adventure business. And one thing led to another. They're like, we're in. If people are riding our adventure bikes, they're going to buy them.
Yes, right.
And now we're 7 years into it, and doing great.
So cool.
Last year, 2024, all motorcycle sales were negative or just even, except the adventure market. The adventure market had an 18% increase.
Okay.
People are tired, getting tired of riding on the streets. Right. I mean, Florida roads.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
How busy are they?
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy.
And so people are like, we want to explore gravel roads. We want to go ride in the Rocky Mountains, the Yellowstone, and the adventure market is just went whoop, through
there
the
it
roof.
Is. There
and
it is.
So fortunate to be a part of this brand and this company and riding adventure bikes and entertaining people. And this is what I do on my adventure rides. I tell them about my life.
Right.
And
yeah, I love it.
I want them to tell me about their life.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about it's not about me. Mm-hmm. I want it about the customer. I want to know the five guys I have with me. I want to know what they've done and their kids and their life. And it's that's what the that's what my adventure business is about. It's not about how many people I can take on a ride. Mm. You know, I keep them small. I keep them personal. Like this.
Right.
Like I said, I want to know about their history and their life.
So that's in Upper Michigan.
Northern Michigan.
Northern Michigan.
Yep. So people fly into Big Rapids or Grand Rapids, Michigan, and it's based out of Big Rapids, Michigan, and we do 2-day rides.
Okay.
3 nights, 2 days, do about 200 miles a day of beautiful gravel roads, hardpack gravel roads.
Okay.
It's not about going fast. It's about enjoying the scenery, enjoying the bikes, and the camaraderie.
Oh, I'm sure when it's done, they all agree it was a life-changing experience for them. I mean, just looking at the pictures on your Instagram, which, again, is... and then the adventure, you have another one for your adventure ride.
Jeff Stanton Adventures is another Instagram.
Go look at the pictures. By the way, there was a picture I saw with a baby deer, which would be called a fawn, right? Can I be guaranteed to hold one of those if I come
if you come in May, I can guarantee May or June, I can guarantee that you do that. So that's a
that's another one that you're doing.
Yes.
Oh, another job you do.
Yeah, that's another that's another job I do. Where we stop at another deer farm. He always was bottle feeding babies, and that you saw the picture. So my wife was there for that ride, and it does break your heart. So, but yes, that's another business I have. I raise white-tailed deer, and that's why we stay where we stay at. We stay at Two Hats Ranch because it's a big hunting preserve, and they got a 5-star lodge, 5-star food, and I use them for food and lodging, and that's why we end up there.
Brilliant.
But yeah, we do lots of cool stuff.
So white-tailed deer. So you raise white-tailed deer.
They're so pretty.
I raise white-tailed deer down in southern Michigan where I actually live.
Okay.
We've been doing it for 16 years.
Okay.
And so I raise big, what we call shooter bucks, big bucks to sell, to get hunted.
Okay.
I mean, it's a business. It is what it is.
Right. Hmm.
All my girls, my does, I keep them for life on the farm. And so it's just a passion that I had. My daughter, 16 years ago, we were driving down the road, and she looks over, and she sees a mom laying in the ditch that got hit by a car, and there's a baby laying there. And so from day one, my daughter's always wanted to be a vet and save everything.
And she is a vet,
And
right?
she is a vet,
She's
yeah.
a vet.
And save everything. So we got that deer, and we picked it up, and we named it Styles, and we bottle fed it. And that's what started the whole... Let's start a deer farm. That's how it all started. So,
Well, Jeff, one of the things when we talked at Daytona, we talked about how this podcast. I mean, the audience is probably different than some of the audiences that listen to you, but the audience is optometrists, business owners, but probably a lot of eye doctors and employees of eye doctors, and we love them. We love everyone, obviously, but we have gone out there saying we want to talk to people who can tell a story that's inspirational and educational. So you've educated us today, but I haven't asked you the questions that really are near and dear to my heart. I told David, I said, you guys talk dirt bikes, and then I'm going to say, tell me what you learned from your mom, because I've watched some of the videos where you've talked about family and the importance of family. We've met Sarah, your wife. She's amazing. Your kids, one day we'll get to meet them. Tell us about mom and some of the lessons from her, and then dad as well.
Yeah, so the one that sticks in, and we just buried my mom a year and a half ago as well.
Oh, sorry,
and
Jeff.
So it's been thrown at us. But and I talked about this a lot when we were in those dark days with my mom. I remember being at Axton, Virginia. They don't race there anymore, but they had a couple of pro nationals there. I remember being at Axton, Virginia, and it was like 105 degrees. It was hotter than hot. You know, at the end of 35 minutes, you didn't want no part of it. You know, you're smoked. No matter how much you trained, you know, it's just hot, sticky. It was down in a hole,
And you wear a lot of clothes.
Yeah, you wear a lot of clothes, and you know you're battling. Back then, I was battling with Jean-Michel Bale and Damon Bradshaw.
Oh,
and the first moto, I struggled, but I ended up winning. And so it's like the second moto, she comes up to me, she gives me a big hug, and she says, "Just remember, no matter how bad you're hurting at the 20-minute mark, they're hurting twice as bad. So at the 20-minute mark, that's when you turn up the heat and you'll crack them."
Oh.
And that stuck in my head. That stuck in my head. It's still there. It stuck in my head for life.
Unbelievable.
And in the second moto, I did just that. At 20-minute mark, you're tired, you're smoked. It's 105 degrees, but
heart rate's at 180,
yeah,
190,
yeah, exactly.
200
and
for
so,
20 straight minutes.
And if you can get a gap and crack them at the 20, 25-minute mark, you know, then they mentally go, "This, I don't have it." And so,
wow,
you know, just little things. I got my toughness and my mental toughness 100% from my mom.
And she rode dirt bikes too, right?
My mom was a champion in the late 70s and women's champion.
Oh my gosh. That is so amazing.
I've got pictures of her riding her Husky 360 automatic, and so she was a trooper. She loved speed, whether it was street racing in high school with my dad or motorcycles, snowmobiles. Her and I had done a bunch of snowmobile races, endurance races. And so I got that side from my mom. And mechanically, you know, everything come from my dad. My dad didn't really ride that much. He just worked on everything that we all broke all the time. And so
it's a good thing he was there, right?
Yeah. So, and for both of my parents, we, you know, as I said, we were born and raised on the farm. So just the work ethic.
Yep.
You know, we had 2,000 or 3,000 head of sheep on the farm all the time.
Wow.
And so we baled endless amounts of square bale hay.
This is elementary, middle school, and high school for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, elementary. Yeah.
Talking 12 straight years.
Absolutely.
You're 18.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And so the reason I'm so successful is because my opinion is being raised where I was raised in the Midwest on a farm. We weren't wealthy by any means. My dad and I cut wood all winter to store up enough money to be able to go start the season.
Wow.
When it was
time to ride.
When it was time to race, you know, in my 14, 15, you know, I'm making it up the amateur ranks.
Mm.
Maybe I can make it pro. You know, it took a lot of funds to be able to travel all over every weekend.
Oh, yeah.
And so my dad and I and my brother, we would cut wood all winter, save up thousands of dollars. And that's what that money went for.
Wow.
And it got us started to where we start racing and, you know, win bonus money from, I was a Yamaha guy back then. My whole amateur career, I was a Yamaha guy, Yamaha sport program. And so they had contingency, you know, at all the big races. So. Mm. Hard work, work ethic, responsibility by being, you know, raised on the farm. And then I raised my kids that way.
Yeah.
You know, my kids baled hay every day. And when my daughter's employer comes up to me now and said, "That's the hardest working female that we have." And there's a reason.
That makes you proud.
There's a reason for it.
Yeah.
Because I was raised that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a hard ass. I mean, my wife would tell you, I was a hard ass. We worked hard, but it pays
that's
off
right.
in the long run.
Yeah,
that's right.
It sure does.
It does.
So tell
Amazing.
Me about, you said in one of the clips that I watched, you said something about maybe not, and I hate to even say it out loud because it doesn't seem right, but you said, "I may not have been the most talented, but I was the hardest working." And is that the way you say
100%.
It?
100%. And if Ricky was here, he would say the same thing about himself.
Really?
Oh, absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Man.
You know, he wasn't the most talented, but between himself and his mom, Jeannie, they put in the lap times and they worked their butt off.
Yeah.
I was the same way. I was a big farm kid. As my career went on, I thinned out and got in better shape. But I made up for it in 100% hard work. There was days, let's just say, it rained a couple of days at home throughout the week and I couldn't get in the right amount of practice in the right amount of training.
Mm-hmm.
Mentally, I wasn't prepared. It just that's just how I was.
Yeah.
But if I had 4 days of training and ran my 6-mile loop every day and it was just on point, I show up and it's donezo.
You're good to go.
It's donezo for everybody, you know? So 100%
wow.
was not was not talented. And, you know, being in the Midwest, we didn't have supercross tracks. We had outdoor tracks. Yeah, that's why I was a better outdoor rider than
right.
I was.
Yeah.
But I adapted to supercross surrounded myself with good people and learned the supercross mode rather quickly. Mm. And I had some breaks. You know, you create your luck, and I capitalized on it,
there
and it was all good.
That's
Did you
awesome.
Doubt yourself at any point along
the
way?
Oh, you always doubt yourself. You always do.
And it's normal.
That's why you surround yourself with good people.
Mm. Yeah.
And I hate to keep going back to Ricky Carmichael, but the reason Ricky Carmichael was so successful is because he doubted himself every day.
Wow, what a lesson.
But he had the people pushing
him. You got to tell us more.
And he had the right people pushing him.
So Ricky had either myself or his really his best friend and his manager, JH. He had at least two people with him at every race.
Yep.
And we were creatures of habit. The stories can go on and on and on. But after every practice, whether he was the fastest guy or not, supercross or outdoor, he doubted himself every race and just needed some insurance and encouragement from somebody like myself or the people that he had around him. And I say that that's why he was so successful. He had no cockiness.
It's unreal.
Okay?
Yeah.
Was just stable and consistent and surrounding himself with the people.
But you also know? The fastest and craziest.
So is it mind-boggling to you that people like him and Jeff ever doubted themselves?
Yeah. I mean, I watched all those races, and you don't see anything behind the scenes.
Right.
You see, I know nothing as far as from a fan's point
Incredible.
Of view. But when you see these guys ride, I mean, they're falling off the bikes as they're going so fast. They're literally falling off the bikes.
You guys look
but
sometimes like
back
you
in.
Can't even hold it.
But if you go back to any sports and you see that guy that's cocky and arrogant and over the top, loud and obnoxious, they usually have something go wrong.
Mm.
You know, karma. Yeah. Karma's real, okay? And so it's being able to keep that focus and that believing in yourself just enough, but not over the top to where, you know, you think you're invincible. Because as soon as that happens, dude, you hit the ground just like that.
Yeah.
So
I love it.
So Dad said something in one of the videos about, I don't remember the story, Jeff, you're going to have to help me, but something, and my dad grew up on a dairy farm, so I should know this, but something about working when the sun is out. How does that phrase go?
Oh, no.
Make hay, that's it.
Make hay when the sun shines. yeah. Oh, and my dad has told me that many a times in the racing world, and we hear
it
all.
What does it mean? Tell us.
Well, you make hay when the sun shines. So, I mean, when you make hay, you cut the hay, and you look at the forecast because you need 5 good days to dry the hay. So when you cut it, it needs to lay on the ground for at least 4 to 5 days to dry because you can't bale hay wet. Mm. If you bale it wet,
it's going to rot.
It rots. Mm. And rotted hay does nobody any good. It will kill the animals. So you make hay when the sun shines. When it's hot and windy, that's when you make hay. You don't make hay when it's dreary, miserable, and 40 degrees. So that's where you make hay when the sun shines.
So
that's where that comes from.
And you made hay between 1985 and 1994.
That's exactly it.
You make hay.
That's just it.
This is prime. So it's prime time, right?
For example, we do 14 supercrosses in the United States. We start the second week of January, and we do almost 14 in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And that puts us at the 1st of May.
Right.
And there's a weekend off, and then we do 12 to 14 outdoor races.
Right.
All over the country.
Right.
And then back when I raced, there was a huge European circuit that we did.
Hmm.
The end of September, I would go to Europe for 12 to 15 races.
So that's after the outdoors is done.
That's after the outdoors is done. And racing was huge back then, and there was a ton of money.
Hmm.
And so
over there,
they called it show up money. So you would just to show up, they would put 15, 20, 30,000 bucks cash in our pockets. And so there's a downside. 1990 through 94, I did 50 races a year.
Many weeks in a year? Oh, my gosh.
There's 52.
Yeah.
So, like, we would go to Paris. My wife and I would go to Paris. We would race Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night.
Wow.
At the Bercy Supercross. If you look up Bercy Supercross, it's a huge popular race.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, back then they had the sponsors, and they would just pay us all show-up money to come over there and put on a show.
Huh.
That's what it was about.
Yeah.
And so we'd do Milan, we'd do Geneva, we'd do Paris a couple of times a year. We'd do two races in Japan. We'd do Switzerland. And it was just these big invitational races. And so the downside is you're racing 52 races a year.
Right.
But the upside is, as my dad said,
there's a little bit of hay.
You make a lot of hay.
Okay. I
made a lot of hay. I made as much hay over there racing 12 or 15 races as I did here.
Yeah.
Doing the indoors and the outdoors.
But here's what I want to know. Sarah, was he exhausted afterwards?
Yeah.
Hard on the body.
That's when you do 50 races a year, it's hard on the body.
Yeah.
I mean, it shortened my career. I mean, I'll be the first to admit, it shortened my career. The travel, you know,
right.
all the flights back and forth to Europe and the hotels and the 50 races a year. But I wouldn't have changed anything because
I was going to ask you that.
No,
would you change anything?
No, I wouldn't have changed anything because that money's about a year after I retired, that money dried up. That's when things started getting tight and sponsors were. They only do one race over there, and that's the Bercy Supercross. That one's still the most popular. They still do that one. That's the only one they do.
Mm.
And so
they stopped those over there.
That totally stopped. So I wouldn't have changed anything. It was it was great experience traveling the world with Sarah and I and going to all those races. And the people that we met and the culture that we learned was super cool.
So tell me about one of the things you mentioned. I remember from listening to you, Jeff, and people I'm sure that are watching, they totally get this. You're so genuine, so real, so caring. You talked about family. Mm-hmm. You talked about grit and really just, like you said now, mental toughness. One of the other things you talked about, which I don't hear often, is loyalty. So tell me about that. You take it wherever you want, but I want to hear about it.
Again, I go back to how I was raised, being raised on the farm, family was important. I'm going to use one person for an example.
Okay.
We just had a retirement party and a celebration at Daytona this year. Bevo Forte, Scott USA, my goggle company.
Scott Goggles.
Scott Goggles.
Yeah.
Scott, I was with Scott Goggles when I was an amateur. I stood behind that Scott van at Loretta Lynn's in the mid '80s. And Bevo was giving me goggles when I was an amateur. Signed my first professional contract with Scott in 1986.
Wow.
We just continued that relationship.
Yeah.
He would give me a long-term contract. And I started winning championships in 89, 90. Yeah. Loyalty.
Life lesson.
Loyalty meant way more than $30,000.
Right.
Because Bevo and I... We just talked to him yesterday. Yep. We talk all the time.
Wow.
And all those races that I just talked about, Europe.
Yeah.
There wasn't a race that I didn't go to that Bevo didn't travel with me and go to every race.
Wow.
Wow. That's amazing.
And so I had a father in Sherwood, Michigan, but I also had a father at the motorcycle industry, and his name was Bevo.
That's awesome.
Wow.
And so those loyalties mean way more than $30,000 a year.
Yeah.
You know, people say, oh, 30 grand. That'd be nice over 10 years.
Back in 1990.
But do you think anybody from Oakley has ever called me or ever talked to me about anything, life or family or anything?
Mm. Right.
No. But those are Arai helmets. Mm. I signed with Arai in 1984.
Oh, my gosh.
I still get a paycheck in 2025 from Arai helmets.
Right.
That's so cool.
You tell them, I'll guarantee you that there is nobody in the entire United States or industry that is getting a paycheck 45 years later.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Guarantee it.
Yeah.
Great life lessons.
So no, 100%. And listen, there ain't nobody that does it right now. I mean, I'll throw some guys under the bus right now. I look at Cooper Webb. He's changed clothing manufacturers almost every year for the last 5 years. There's no loyalty anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
There's none.
It's a mistake.
Down the road it is because, you know, so where do you go to? If I need something now and I call Jeff from Arai, the helmets are showing up within 2 days.
Right.
Same with Bevo.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, they're not afraid.
Yeah.
Because they know that I'm going to be there for them and I know that they're going to be there for me.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what'd you have? This is the new Triumph dirt bike here behind us.
Yeah.
This is...
Did you have any part of that?
Not a lot. You know, that was kind of Ricky's whole side. I mean, I've been supporting him and been involved in all the releases of him and just been a part of the family.
Okay.
Wow, what a great decision. I was with Honda for, you know, like I said, 25 years.
Yep.
Rod called me, as I said, one day, and it just...
Life has changed. It
really has changed. Yeah. I mean, my wife and I pinch ourselves every now and again. You know, when we did the 250 release, and Ricky and I rode them at the LA Coliseum.
That's a great video.
And we're out to dinner with the owners. I mean, the Triumph is a family-owned business.
Mm-hmm.
It's a father and son.
Wow.
And we're out to dinner with, you know, Ricky and JH and Rod, the president here, and the owners at the nicest restaurant in LA. And I'm like, I mean, I get why I'm in that position, but it's like, how many years later where we're at now.
Yeah.
And so, it's been awesome. It's awesome to be part of the family.
Wow.
They want me to be a part of all the cool stuff that's going on. And we're just, we're blessed and fortunate that we got that phone call. And the reason we got that phone call, you go back to loyalty. Rod was headhunted by Triumph. He used to work at Suzuki, the president of Triumph. He worked at Suzuki.
Okay.
Triumph wanted to start to develop a motocross bike.
Right.
So they formulated their plan to formulate the team that they needed. They hired Rod. Rod called Ricky because Rod was Ricky's boss when he was at Suzuki.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Called Ricky and said, we want to build a motorcycle.
Here we go.
We have to have you as a brand ambassador.
Mm.
They sat down for dinner. Rod says, who do we need on our program? Ricky and I are so super close. Ricky's like, you need this guy, this guy, this guy, and this guy.
Yeah.
2 days later, I get a call from Rod.
Wow.
Ricky says, you're the man.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go ride some dirt bikes.
And that's how that started. You talk about loyalty family. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just how the world, that's how the world turns. You do good.
Right.
You're good to people and loyal to people. And the Triumph thing is just blew up in the last 8 years.
That is awesome. We cannot wait to come up and do an adventure ride.
Oh, I was going to say. So are you inviting anybody to go with you?
Please come along. We're going to, I've already had, I think, 4 people tell me, when are you going? Because I'm in. So reach out to us. We're going to be going up, and maybe we'll do a few if we have time and can get it on the schedule, if your wife will let you.
Yeah.
Sarah's fine. I already talked to her. Yeah. She said maybe y'all learn how to ride.
She wants to join us.
She's
she's in that slow down mode at work now, and
it's gonna be a blast.
It's the adventure thing is just super cool. You know, like we do 200 miles a day, and we average like on 200 miles we average like 30 mile an hour. So it's not like we're going 80 mile an hour all day long. It's just like I said,
you get to see the scenery,
showcasing how beautiful Michigan is.
That's great.
Enjoying our time and seeing cool destinations throughout Michigan.
So what did I leave out? I told David a couple of times, don't let me forget to ask Jeff this. But I know one thing we always ask, and I'll ask him this, and then you can close, Dave, is what is something, like a highlight in your life?
Yeah.
You can make it be about, you know, any one of the jobs or whatever, just something that stands out that you would say, if my kids were standing right here, I would want them to remember or know this is something you can't forget. Maybe a life experience or a highlight in your career.
Gosh, you know, I've had
so many.
Yeah, I've had so many great things happen in my career by the way I won titles. Mm-hmm. In 1992, Damon Bradshaw and I was battling. I was like 9 points behind going into the last race. Pretty good chance that...
Nine points.
Yeah, pretty good chance. I got no chance of winning. Damon was, you know, at the top of his game.
Yep.
He just had to be one position behind me, you know, or two positions behind me. If I won, if he was third, he won the title.
Right.
If I was third,
he could be fifth.
Yeah, it's just... And so there was zero chance. And so I ended up pulling a whole shot and leading, and he just couldn't handle the pressure, and he cracked. And I won that. I won the title at the LA Coliseum.
Wow.
I won, and he's like back in seventh, just struggling. And so anybody that's a part of the motocross industry, they know that exact race and my emotion there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, a lot of cool races.
Yeah.
You know, if I say motocross to nations, you know what the motocross to nations are. It's the Olympics of motocross.
Yep. It's a team.
They take the 3 best racers from every country, and they do it every year. And so I was honored to win all four of them that I was involved in.
Wow.
As an individual winner and a USA winner.
Yeah. USA.
And so those, I had some super emotional races there where I passed guys on literally the last lap with a few turns to go to win. And so those rank up there, you know, as like winning the Olympics.
Top race.
Yeah, yeah.
You never give up.
In one of them, there was a huge crash in the first turn, and I was at the bottom of the crash. And we had to beat a couple of these riders that were Belgians. We had to beat them. And so I picked my bike back up and just, okay, I got to keep going. You know, my mom's like, never quit, never quit. Keep picking guys away, picking guys away. And Bevo Forde, who we just talked about. You know, Bevo was a big guy. He's 300 pounds. And halfway through the race, he's on the side of the track going, come on, come on. You know, and as every lap that went by, his enthusiasm picked up. Well, that I knew him well enough to know that, dude, maybe we got something going here. So then with like two laps to go, he's like, you know, and I knew what that meant. You know, we were close enough to know that I got to knock the guy in front of me out of the way, you know. And so
you got to get around him.
Yeah, and so I did that on the last lap with like three turns to go, and we ended up winning. And so
and
Sarah was involved in that race as well. And so a lot of cool emotional races.
You think that's your most memorable one?
Yeah, that one there was for sure my most memorable one.
Really?
And to win that on the last lap and to honor your country.
Come back.
And to come back and win and never quit. And, you know, I passed my teammate with Damon Bradshaw. I passed him in that last moto. And so, you never quit. You continue to fight. This is one thing Bevo told me. You quit one time, it's easy from there on out. You quit one time, whether it's in a basketball game, a t-ball game. What I don't care what athletics is your choice, but you quit one time, it's set in your head. It's set in your head that I can quit at any time because I quit at this one.
Whoa.
So you never quit. You keep fighting and you keep pushing.
I love that.
Yeah, no, that and it's
100% true.
That is good stuff.
100% true. Lots of life lessons along the way.
I don't know how we're going to top that.
No, that's amazing. So that's a great one for the kids, too. Your kids are amazing. I looked them up. Your daughter's a veterinarian. Your son, I don't quite understand, but I know it's amazing. Tell me.
Yeah, so you know, long generation farming. You know, he wants to be a farmer. And my younger brother, who's 17 years younger than I am, he runs a farm. And so my son graduated high school. We're like, go to college.
Yep.
Bring something more than hard work to the farm. We can all work hard.
Yeah.
Okay. And the farm can't support multiple families here.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he went to Michigan State, a crop and soil science and horticulture. So he's an agronomist. So he goes out and he goes out to all the local farmers and gets signs a contract with them, and he tests their soil. Farming's a new level. You don't just put seeds in the ground anymore and hope that it's going to water and rain, and you put fertilizer on the whole field.
Right.
It's at a new level. We could go on and on about his life and the studies of soil and chemicals and drones but it's gone to a new level, and so that's what he's doing now and enjoying it. And one day he'll come back and take over the farm when my younger brother's done. But we're like, go make some money, enjoy it, learn, and the farm will always be there to come back to.
That's
so
great.
Good, so good. Yeah. Well, man, thank you so much.
No, right. Thank you.
We appreciate you being on the show with us and just spending time, and what an honor. It's been a long time. I remember watching you 35 years ago, 40 years ago. It's crazy.
I think I'm the same. I'm older, so I'm older. So whatever you say, be careful. But no, Jeff, we so appreciate it.
Yeah.
And thank you to the Tampa Triumph dealership, too. You guys are awesome for letting us be here.
Yep,
absolutely.
But the lessons of your family, just watching what you've done. I hope you and Sarah are going to write a book, by the way. Because there's definitely
we could write a book about
this.
A lot of things. Just real quick, we had a wedding business for for years. We're slowing down. We just sold a few years ago. And if we could write a book, we'd write a book about our wedding business.
Ooh,
you know,
I
doing
bet.
30 weddings a year. We had just a lot of crazy stuff going there. But it was a great business. That business put my kids through college. And
hard work, we're entrepreneurs.
Fortunate. Yeah, we're fortunate. We've been blessed. And
I know what I wanted to ask you.
Oh, here
so
we go.
For the family that is listening that has never been on a motorcycle, they don't even know what we're talking about when we talk about these races. What's one race they should go to be impressed? I mean, I don't think people know, and I'm going to ask you, I don't think people know how difficult it is to ride a dirt bike in a race. So is it?
No, it isn't for me because I've done it since I'm 3 years old,
right,
you know,
right.
Hitting all them jumps where you're jumping 100 feet in the air. It's just muscle memory. Mm. It's no different than watching the girls shoot free throws last night at the girls basketball game. It's just muscle memory. So, no, but yes, it's grueling. For somebody to look up the AMA outdoor motocross schedule and go to a motocross outdoor national, that's where the true grit and hard work and determination. That's where you really see it because it's up in your face,
right?
And you're close.
It's hot.
It's
dirty. Yes, you ride in the rain.
It's two races.
They do 2 40-minute motos, and you can catch all this stuff on NBC. It's all on TV now.
Right.
But
it's not the same
on
TV.
No, it is not.
That's what I was just gonna say. You watch a Supercross sitting in your living room. I'm gonna watch Supercross tonight sitting in my living room here. It doesn't do it any justice as being as you know,
the sounds, the smells, the feelings.
So
they need to go to one, so pick one outdoors.
So I'm from Michigan. Red Bud is the best outdoor national race in the world. There's no doubt. You can see everything. The track is the grandstands is up on a knoll. You see basically the whole track, and so Red Bud is the place to go watch an outdoor national. But look up the outdoor national motocross schedule and just hit an outdoor national, and that'll give you
a pretty good idea
of what it's all about.
Because you can go to the Supercross races and you can see them in the stadium, but when you see that jump in the stadium and then you go see it on the hill, it's a completely different
incredible.
Perspective.
Yeah.
You watch these guys sail 150 feet.
Yeah.
It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Well done. Well, we appreciate you so much. And I hope everybody sees us on an adventure ride.
Yep, absolutely. That's the next podcast. We'll be sitting at Two Hats Ranch over a fire.
There it is.
And
it's a deal.
Talking about my deer business.
That's right.
Of all the business I have, honestly, that's what I enjoy the most. I just enjoy the fawning. We start fawning here. Yeah, we can go on.
Wow.
And on.
We'll
save that for another
we'll
one.
We'll save that for another
ride. One of those baby deer.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. Thanks for being here. I just want you to know that we love you. We appreciate you. And the lessons from today, just a big thank you to you, Jeff, for being here with us.
Yeah.
And Dave, any last words?
That is it. Appreciate you.
Yes. Yeah, so look forward to seeing everybody again. And hope you all enjoyed it. And look up the motocross industry, the supercross industry, or the adventure bike industry.
That's right.